Let's do a podcast.
Let's do a podcast.
Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, January 31st, 2016. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. And we can discuss it. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 154. And I'm sitting in my apartment that I need to clean up. I'm looking at it. I've been so busy, you guys. I need to do some things. I need to install the new router I got from being locked in another contract with Fios. I thought that I was going to get rid of cable, but when I called them and said, I was trying to see what my options are, because I had to renew my contract, and I was like, I had to see what my options are, you know what I'm saying? I might have to drop some things. And they were like, sir, wait a minute. We don't want you to do that. You know, so I just dropped my phone coverage, phone service, because landline service, I never used it at all in the 2 years that I had it. So they made a bit of a break for me. And so I'm still stuck. I mean, I love Fios. It's just an expense. But then you look at it where, you know, I would rather have that. I'd rather have what I have and still only watch five channels. Oh boy, what did I get myself into? I'm sitting here in the apartment. I have NBA TV on mute, and the Cavs beat the Spurs, which is a good thing. The Bills' morale, now that Tyronn Lue is the head coach. Everybody's acting like, you know, the David Blatt firing, like it was the worst thing in the world to ever happen to a coach. The guy is still under contract. He's still getting paid. I don't feel sorry for him. I think I might have mentioned that last week, but they were just, the fallout from it was just so more intense than it needed to be. Is LeBron James a coach killer? And then some Miami official said that LeBron tried to get Eric Spoelstra fired. All this stuff, and LeBron's like, I don't know what people are talking about. Calling me a coach killer makes me feel sad. I don't know. Everybody knows he runs that team, and it's fine. It's not, the NBA is not a coach-driven league. It's not like college. If you want to have absolute power and you want to be seen as a deity, you coach college basketball. If you want to, I don't know, if you want to not be that dude, you want to be a good coach and you want to win, you got to win quick and you got to fall in line to whatever the players want you to do. George Carl said it best, like, God, maybe 15, 16, maybe 20 years ago. I'll never forget this. He was on a show. See, now I'm saying that I'll never forget what exactly. I don't know if it was on a Jim Rome show when he was on ESPN, but he said coaching an NBA team is like coaching 12 different corporations. Like every player is a corporation and you have to fulfill the needs essentially of all of those organizations. Well, you're not in control. The players are in power. So if you're not pleasing the players, and especially you're not pleasing the best player in the league, who's considered to be a basketball genius, an icon, you got to go. So it's not a big surprise. Everybody's like, oh, my God, they won. They got to the finals. They're having a winning season. I just think that loss, if you when the Warriors beat the shit out of you and you can't beat any good teams, it's a problem, and you got to go. I just don't know. Oh, DeMarcus Cousins is hurt. Fuck, I hope he's – oh, shit. I hate seeing anybody get hurt, but when a star gets hurt and you just hate that because the fans that come to see him. This Kings aren't – they are like a team on the rise, I would say. I like these young teams, man. They make stuff more interesting. Like this, the Spurs – I mean the Sixers almost beat the Warriors last night, and Harrison Barnes hit a three to close the game out, to close out the tie game, and at the end of regulation, knocked them out. But that means that the Sixers have potential, and they shouldn't be trying to tank. But what was I saying? Yeah, they just made that David Blatt firing a big deal, and he's a millionaire. He'll be fine. He'll coach somewhere where they will respect him. Ask Mike Brown how it feels to keep getting fired all the time. You know, he's one of the probably. Is he still on somebody's payroll? Is he still on the Lakers' payroll? I don't know. Who knows? So we're going to talk about some things. We're going to talk about my week. We're going to talk about chicken. Talk about the Super Bowl. We'll talk about some movies. I'll give you a music recommendation, and we'll get out of here. I'll get you through your commute, your whatever. What I always say: commute, laundry, at the gym, which I need to go back to. While you're cleaning up around the house, so yeah. Why don't I just do that instead of just tell you whatever activity you're doing, that I'm going to get you through it. And just, why don't you just do the job, Chris? Why don't you just do your hashtag, do your job and get on with it? The podcast has been reviewed by actual listeners, and I did not know. And I didn't realize this. I check it sporadically. I try not to check too much, but I did get a nice iTunes review. So let me just read this. It was a 5-star review from Mundaneness on January 14th, 2016. It's his name is Go Gunners, and the title was Mundaneness. And he or she says, I saw Chris do stand up. He was funny. I saw Chris had a podcast. I like podcasts. Chris's podcast is funny. Thank you, Go Gunners. Very straightforward and to the point. Very efficient. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening. That makes me feel nice. And then I had some from like 2 and 3 months ago from Stitcher. And before then, it was I had just a couple of reviews. The homie Rod from the Black Guy Who Tips and B. Smith, who gave me some love. So let me read some newer ones from about 2 to 3 months ago. Okay, here we go. Let's do this. From Jay, from 2 months ago, the Summer Rain Girl. I was talking about this really attractive, the really hot brown skin, caramel, light skinish girl from Carl Thomas's Summer Rain video. And she was in like a Midas commercial or I don't know. It just seemed like she might have done a few things, but she was just like too hot to not be like doing stuff. I felt like she could be doing more with her career. I don't know how I got onto that topic, but I did mention her before. And so Jay says, oddly enough, I too recall the girl from the Summer Rain video and her later appearance in a Home Depot commercial. Also of note, she was a Playboy model, and that's always worth a point or two. In more important news, your podcast, gotta love it. I appreciate your perspective on things, and salute to you being a fellow Marylander, and (Baltimore over her). That's the Baltimore over her and all. Keep delivering and I'll keep listening. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate that. This is from Jabby. The title is Black Quarterbacks. Great show. Heard about you from Rod and also on Three Guys On. I like the inside baseball comedy talk and share your love for black quarterbacks and actors. Thank you, Jabby. Here's another one. Let's do another one. This is from Dre from 3 months ago. Really enjoy the show. Great podcast. Chris does a great job of relating his life experiences to everyone. I first heard Chris on The Black Eye Who Tips, and I've been a fan ever since. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Dre. Thanks, everybody, for reviewing. If you review the show, you can hear me read your name on the internet. How about that, folks? And you get my undying love and respect, and I appreciate you listening. And I'll keep bringing them to you. I'll keep trying to evolve, keep trying to be more interesting when I'm by myself because I don't have a guest today, this week. There's people that I definitely want to reach out to, and we'll get them going. I think the goal this year is to try to bank a few, try to grab as many as I can, and then like I did when I first started getting interviews. So we got some stuff in store for you, and we're going to keep growing, and I appreciate you guys listening. This is going on 3 years that I've been doing this thing. I think March of 2013 is when I uploaded the first episode. So thank you. Those of you that were here from the beginning, I thank you so much. And I hope you can see the improvement and continue to stick with me, you guys. Okay, so episode 154 of the Mundane Festival podcast, just me solo sitting on my couch, NBA TV on mute, and here we go. So let's talk about my week. Comedy show business week was pretty fun. I would say I was exhausted getting back from Albany, did that hotel commercial and got to do a fun show in Schenectady. Had a great burrito at Bombers Burrito. And so I just relaxed, watched the NFC Championship, which the Panthers won. I was so happy. I'm glad it was a blowout. I was nervous. I was, like I told you last week, I was nervous. Didn't know what was going to happen because I was afraid of that Arizona defense, Dwight Freeney being a stud, just that whole defensive line. And they just ran over those dudes. And it just makes me feel like, I feel like the Panthers can win this thing. And some people are a little too overconfident. Like, I just don't know. And like, I don't know if I'm going to a Super Bowl party. I don't know that I'm cool enough to get invited to one. But if somebody invites me, I'll go. I'll be fine just watching it at home. I think I've done that the past 2 or 3 years. And I've done a really good job at not watching the store, like all the build up on Sunday. I have a horse in the race with the Panthers, so I may try to tape some of it, and after they win, watch, because the stories are usually pretty dope. And you know, maybe they'll be focusing on Cam Newton, so I'm excited for it, but I'm also nervous. Because there's always so much hoopla. I think what I'll do, I know Bill Burr has a really good Super Bowl plan where he says you do it for like, was it like 90 minutes? You record the game, you wait 90 minutes, and then you watch it, and you get to skip through all the stuff. You don't watch TV, you eat, and you just like, you don't look at your phone, and you just, you know, you know how you can skip through all the halftime bullshit. That's cool. I just think the Super Bowl's fun when you treat it like the Grammys or any type of major event or an award show where there's people live tweeting it and they making fun of the commercials and all of that stuff. So that's fun too. Like I enjoy that too. But I could see myself. Well, shit, last year I had a horse and I wanted Seattle to win, and that was pretty rough. I was pretty torn up about that. So the last two Super Bowls, the last two, Seahawks were in it 2 years in a row, and now this one. So the last two, and this will be three, like I've had a horse in the race, you know. So, I wouldn't mind not going to a party. I'll just get some food and watch it like a loner, you know, like a regular black JD Salinger. I think that's what I'll probably end up doing. So I think they can do it now. And now, you know, Cam has been, you know, saying, hey, I'm an African-American quarterback and people feel some kind of way about it. I just like the fact that he's unapologetic about this whole situation. And people, I think at this point, if you don't like Cam Newton, you're racist. You're racist. Now, I get why people don't like him. If you celebrate, people, they just don't. I just don't get it. Where it's like this game, athletics is so hard to get to the highest level, and the backgrounds of some of these people, like their lives have been hard. So you work so hard all your life, most of your life, to get to this high position, and you make a jump shot, you hit a home run, or you score a touchdown. Like it's an emotional game, and not everybody's gonna be Barry Sanders and just give the ball to the ref. You know, like they're going to celebrate, and Cam Newton celebrate. He's having a good time. And I've said this for years, you know, when Cam celebrates, it's a problem. Everybody's always. And see, now, which if you listen to my show, if you listen to this show long enough, now you're starting to hear the narratives or the comparisons for when Aaron Rodgers celebrates, or it's a commercial, it's a national commercial, when Tom Brady celebrates, he's a fiery competitor. Cam Newton celebrating is just more of an exaggerated version of Brett Favre. That's all it is. Brett Favre smiled all the time. You'd sack him, he'd laugh at you because he knew he was going to come down the field and he's going to get back up and try to score on you. I mean, it's the same thing. It's just an exaggerated Brett Favre, you know, and Cam is not being humble about it. You know, he's gonna, if you have a problem with it, if you play it, like I hear, like, what is it? Brian Urlacher said, I have a problem with him celebrating. I just have a problem with it. Da, 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 da. His teammates love him. You know, they play hard for him and they believe in this guy. And that's what you want in your quarterback. And so they don't have a problem with it. You know, gives the balls to kids. And that's really been, and I've gone on record, you guys. I've gone on record and said that's one of my favorite parts of this season is those guys, Cam Newton, giving footballs to the kids. It's really sweet. It's adorable. And it makes me feel good. And I don't care what anybody says. So I'm really excited about it. Nervous. I think if the defense can get to Peyton and cause problems, cause turnovers, I don't want him to get hurt, but if they can get to him, it's going to be a long day. Most people are predicting that Seahawks, a blowout like the Seahawks gave them a couple years ago, and I'm just not so sure. Because then Peyton's throwing these ducks. I hope he continues to throw the ducks. Now people are saying, oh, you know, now I'm hearing people that I respect. I'm not going to say who, but people are saying, oh, I want to see Peyton Manning ride off in the sunset. Fuck that, man. I want Cam to get that shit. We don't know. People say, oh, he's got his whole career ahead. We don't know that. We don't know what's going to happen. Live in the now. You know what I'm saying? We live in the now. I didn't know I was going to do that. But I want Cam to get it, man. Because you don't know when he's going to go back. You don't know what kind of I don't know who's up for free agency. You always when you win a Super Bowl, you get the ring, and then you go looking for money. I don't blame those guys, but you don't know how long those people are going to stay together. So try to get it while you can, because the NFL career is probably one of the most. It's so finite. Every career in athletics is I guess finite is the right word. It's going to end. Football usually ends a lot quicker for people. There's guys that are my age that are done and they're trying to figure out what the rest of their life is going to be. Obviously, they're doing a lot better than me, but then there's something that they've been doing all their life that they can't do anymore. You know what I'm saying? So I'm rooting for them, and I am excited. I think this might be – this will probably be the most nervous that I'll be about a sporting event because – no, the last time I would say I was nervous for LeBron when he was playing with Miami, I was nervous – well, shit, I was nervous during this last year's I was nervous for the finals because I love Steph Curry – but I wanted LeBron to get the chip for Cleveland. And so that was kind of that was pretty intense for me. I didn't even play, but I'm now, because I think in my early to mid 20s, maybe my mid to late 20s, I didn't really stress out about sporting events anymore. When I was a kid, I was really into the Cowboys because my dad was into them. He said, Chris, you're from D.C.? I've mentioned that shit before. Cowboys, Bulls, even though they were winners, I would still be nervous about them winning, you know? So we'll see, man. We'll see how it plays out. I think maybe because I feel like Cam Newton, and if there was a drinking game with this podcast, and every time I've said this on earlier episodes. If you've listened to this show before, you would know that blah 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 blah. Now I lost my train of thought. Cam Newton is the quarterback that. If you like people getting upset, he's the guy you want to see winning because he just gets under people's skin because he smiles, he dabs, and he's having a great time. And that pisses a certain element off, a certain type of persons off, a certain type of persons, a certain type of racist off. So that's the guy. He's the quarterback that we need. And I think I have a planned celebration. I have a planned celebration that I think I might do if they win. I just don't know. I don't know how I'll feel. We'll see. This would be epic because. Who went on record? Who was talking about this week? I'm not sure who was talking about this, but the other quarterbacks that have won, Russell Wilson and Doug Williams, were just kind of stoic and like, you know, my team and this is how I, you know, we're just trying to win the game and I'm a quarterback and that's it. I'm black, but, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with what I'm trying to do. They're very political about it. Cam, you know, he has just had that Beats commercial come out with just like, yo, this is I hope there's no Band-Aids for feelings. And I don't care what you think about me. And now they're starting to give him commercials. Now he's had the Oikos yogurt commercials for a while. And he had that NFL Play 60 commercial with the white little white boy telling him that he was better. He was going to get strong or whatever the fuck. And yeah, so there we are. All right, Super Bowl. I'm excited. So comedy was fun. I did Night Train at Littlefield. And normally Wyatt Cenac hosts that show. And he was not there. So Aparna Nancherla, friend of the podcast, she was the MC. She hosted. Don Will was on the ones and twos. And that was coming off the Blizzard weekend. It was a good crowd. It was fun. I'm going to go on record and say Night Train is one of my favorite shows to do in the city. It's just so much fun. And if you like last week, just talking to Frank as a booker, it's one of those things where people pay like $8 to come to the show, and they're there to have a good time. They're invested. They put money in, they put time in, and they're there to see a show. They're there to have a good time. And I think that was one of the, like, each time I do that, like, cause the show's not, it's not easy. Sometimes Brooklyn audiences can be, they can be tight. They can be, you know, you might want to go somewhere to a darker place and they might not want to go with you. And I'm always the guy that'll say, you know, I don't really think that my comedy's super. It's not like I'm so fucking dark that you're just not gonna, you know, oh, is it too dark for you, dude? Is it too much for you to really take to where I'm, to really understand where I'm going with this? Like, it's so fucking heavy. Like, I'm not that dude, but I just try to, you know, I'm working on speaking my truth and disseminating it in the best way possible to make it palatable for a general audience as much as I can. So that's the goal that all comics should have. You know, you want to make the most amount of people, a wide variety of people, enjoy what you do. So that's what your boy is working on. And but this crowd, it was really fun, and shout out to Marianne Ways for having me, booking me. Like, it's a fun show that I do get to do, maybe if not once, at least maybe twice a year, because there's so many comics in New York. There's so many, you know, the turnaround. You don't want to be there every fucking week, you know. But yeah, like that's just a great room, a great vibe, always fun. It's just like I was talking to another comic about it. That's just like a treat that you get to have as a comic, you know, a few times a year. And it was just fun. I had a good time working on a new bit, and it was cool, man. It's just so much fun. Tuesday I had an audition that I didn't get, but it was a relatively big audition. I don't want to, how much do, can I say? It was an audition for a show that's coming out, and it was just, you know, didn't get it because I knew, like, because they said, oh, Wardrobe is going to call you if you get cast and all this shit there. And they were like, you know, if you book this, you have to come back this day and we'll film this day. And da da da. I was like, oh shit, it'll be so dope to get. But when you audition for stuff, you hear no more often than you hear yes. So the next day I go to work and go home, go to work and do my thing at work and then go home. And then I get a text message from a casting director, and she says, hey, are you available from that thing you auditioned for a couple months ago? Yada yada. I was like, oh, when are you available tomorrow? And I said, okay, when's the audition? She's like, no, I want to cast you in this thing. And I was like, cool, let's do it. Talk to my managers and everything, just worked everything out. And Wednesday I got to do a shoot. I was hired to do a shoot for something that I can't really talk about. don't want to be all cryptic and everything, but I asked the production company, could I talk about it? And they said no. So I was just like, I'll just be as vague as I can. So I did this thing on location in Brooklyn, and it was cool. Like, I had a good time. It was just like it was very unexpected. So one door closes, another one opens, because it was a thing that I had auditioned for maybe like November, December. And I was just like, okay, I guess I didn't get that, because I thought they had started filming like the next couple days or something. And so that was cool. So it was a fun time. And Thursday, what did I do Thursday? Thursday, I don't think I did anything. So then Friday, I went down to, I did a show at the Creek in the Cave, and what would I call this? I did this show called Thug Passion Presents, and we did a dramatic reading, comedic reading of New Jack City. And Thug Passion is produced by Courtney Farrington, friend of the podcast, and Shalay was Sharp, two comics. Shalay was a comic out of Atlanta. She's now in New York. And they run an open mic every Friday at 6 o'clock at the Creek. And they just started doing this present series where they get a bunch of actors and comedians, and they reenact these. How would I describe it? It's kind of like it's a bit like if you've ever seen Mystery Science Theater, and mixed with like a little bit of stage reading. It's not really a table read per se, but it's just kind of that jumbo of all that, and it's a really good time. They pack it out. They had previously done Baby Boy, and it was a hit. So they're doing these urban black cinema. The next one they're doing is Set It Off, and we did New Jack City, and I played Stone, the Mario Van Peebles character, and I was pretty much like the straight guy, and the crowd was really, really rowdy. And I didn't have to be super funny. So the homie Jim Search, friend of the podcast, he played Ice-T, and Ice-T is Jim Search's idol. And so when I got the text from Courtney last week, he said, you know, hey Chris, we're doing Thug Passion, want you to be in do New Jack City. I was like, oh, which role? And he was like, the Mario Van Peebles role. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I was like, but I'm not doing it unless Jim Search is Ice-T. And he was like, all right, you know. And so come to find out, Jim was. And I actually showed Jim the text that I said, you know, because, like, he had Ice-T down packed. Like, there's a picture. I took a picture of him on Instagram, and he's in his Ice-T regalia. And, like, that motherfucker killed that shit. Like, vocally, like, when they first opened the show, Courtney and Shalewa did an introduction, and then, like, they had Jim come out and do New Jack Hustler, like, rap it and do, like, the, like, an acapella, just him, like, you know, mouthing the lyrics or whatever. It was fun. Like, he killed that shit. There was just, like, it was just a great vibe, and it was a show. They did it at midnight. And we had like a run through before the show. It was just dope. It was a good fucking vibe, man. And I was happy to be a part of it. It's good to just have fun, you know, after a like long week. And it was just good to just kind of let my hair down and just be a part of something. They were making fun of me a little bit because I was taking it too seriously. But it's like, when you make somebody act, when you book me to act, I want to do a good job. Like, I don't want to flub any lines. I want to make sure I'm hitting my mark. And it was just fun. Like, I just, like, there was a dude that played, God, I don't even know his name was Chris also, but I should know these dudes' name, but they were delivering these lines to me, and he fucking killed. Like, he was like, he played like the head commissioner guy. Okay, I'm going to let you do this thing, Stone. And he was just pitch perfect. It was just so fucking fun, man. It was good to see a lot of familiar faces, and a lot of new ones, and it just had a fucking blast. So the next time if you're in Long Island City, go to the Creek in the Caves website. They do follow Courtney Farrington and Shalewa on Twitter, and go to this show. It's a fun time. It's a free show. Get yourself some drinks and some food and just, you know, sit back and relax and enjoy that shit, man, because it was a good-ass time. And I got home late as fuck. I was exhausted. A lot of people don't know this, but when you're working like that, if you're filming something, like filming all day, like I was at that place from 9:30 to 7, and we were, you know, it's a lot of hurry up and wait, and then you're doing, I think we did like an hour the first part, like a couple hours the first part, and then like 3 or 4 hours, and it was just like a long stretch of just being there. And it is tiring, and, you know, getting up and going to work the next day, and just, I was exhausted. I got home at like 3 o'clock, and I didn't do shit on Saturday, but I did go, I went to KFC and tried their Nashville hot chicken. It's good. Like, it's good. It's good chicken. And it's impressive for KFC. I hadn't been to KFC in a long time. And I was impressed because my mom and dad were telling me about it. They had gone to KFC. And they were like, oh, it was good. Your mother liked it. And when my mom likes fast food, like, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I'll give this a try. Because I saw the commercials. I was like, all right. Let's give it a try, you know? So that was good. I still have some left. It's left over. It's so fucking expensive. And when I was talking to my dad, I was like, oh, how much we got? He's like, oh, we got 8 pieces. We got, you know, 2 sides. And I was like, how much was it? It's like $24. I was like, fuck, man. Are you, like, it's so, chicken has always been expensive. But, you know, like, if you go to a grocery store, you know, that does like, that has a hot food section, you can get like 8 pieces for $7 or $8. But this shit, dude, was like, and I was like, okay, can I just get like 8 pieces, no sides or whatever? And it was still like $19. And I was like, oh my God. Like, that's just a lot, man. Like, I don't know. Chicken, the prices of chicken are too damn high. It's too damn high. But it was good, though. It was a satisfying meal. It wasn't as hot as I thought it would be. I tried it with hot sauce. I put some Texas Pete on there, and it came out. It was good. I don't know. I just, the price of chicken, it's too fucking expensive for that little chicken. And then they give you these tiny ass wings. Should they even have wings at these places like that? I think that if I get it again, if the next time I go, I'll probably just say no wings. Cause if I'm going to pay that much money, I'll just say, hey, can you just add a cup thighs and like substitute some more thighs instead of wings? Cause it's fucking worthless, you know. But them leftovers gonna be lit though. So we talked about chicken. I gave you my take. I gave you a hot take on Nashville hot chicken / expensive chicken. Walmart chicken. I had their fried chicken. Their rotisserie chicken's great. Fried chicken. The batch that I had, it looked good, but when I had it, it was just kind of like, it was just all right, you know, because I think that batch got cooked too hard, and I was not impressed with that. Stop and Shop Chicken. If you're in the Maryland, D.C. area and you have a Giant, it's the same thing. Like, that's good chicken. Now, obviously, it's not going to be Tennessee hot chicken. It's not going to be the official, I guess. But it whatever it is, it's solid, you know. And it brought me back to KFC. I'll probably go back in a couple weeks, you know. So we talked about that. I talked about the Super Bowl. And so Saturday, I had two shows. I did a show in Brooklyn and in Williamsburg called Good For You. And I want to shout out Eric to give a shout out to Eric Schmidt for having me on the show. It was fun. This show is at Cantina Royale, which is this Mexican restaurant in Williamsburg. And, it's a really swanky, cool, hip place. It's like a small little restaurant bar. And then they have this really nice back room. The restaurant itself is nice, too. But the back room is kind of small, but the ceiling with a super high ceiling. And they have a bartender in the back. It was cool. It was a fun time. One of the hosts of the show was talking about how, God, he's talking about the Oscars. He was like, this crowd is so white. This crowd looks like all the Oscar nominees. And he was a white guy, and he said that. It was pretty funny. And it was really white. And I just told them I felt like I was the entertainment for an REI company retreat. Like, they were all, like, doing their, like, team-building meetings in the morning and afternoon, and all the comics were the entertainment, you know. That shit was fun. I had a good time. That was one of those sets where it was like, this stuff I'm talking about, I'm trying to talk about something that may not... I don't know. Like, it's like I felt like I had a good set. But it was like there was a little bit of struggle. I said, "Well, I'm still gonna keep talking about this." So, you know, this is what it's gonna be, and you're either on board or you're not. And it's just one of those things where you have to just growing as a young comic, you just have to fight through. Like if you have an agenda, you should have an agenda, and stick with it. You know, you got to stick with it and fight through it. Because the same thing kind of happened to me towards the end of the second show that I did. But God, that was so much fun. Williamsburg is so dope. Like, I know, like, there's gentrification and all that bullshit, but just from the options that you have, I don't know if I could ever live there. If I just couldn't have a car there. But if I had money, I would hang out in Williamsburg and go to these different restaurants and bars. Like that aspect of it is really cool. I never really had any problems with people there. I always just say it's NBA All-Star Weekend for white people, like every weekend, every like Friday and Saturday. There's always something going on. And I just found out today that Leanne LeHavis, R&B soul singer from the UK, I'm sure I've mentioned her before in the show, she's doing a show at Rough Trade and it's sold out. I didn't even fucking know about it. I mean, it pisses me off. So like it's always something, some cool shit going on in Williamsburg. And I like it a lot. I mean, I can't really speak on the gentrification and all that shit, but that's just become a hip, popular place where there just seem to be so many cool and interesting restaurants there. And I just know about Williamsburg from the places that I perform, so I'm just kind of like an interloper. It's always like a field trip for me. And I was talking to another comic last night about how you go to some of these shows and they're really cool. The rooms are cool, but you always, as a comic, you just always feel like you're in the way. Because even if a show's packed, like you're just, most of the comics, you just stand in the back, then there's other people with you, and you just kind of like, and I left because I had another spot, but that really is a cool place. Like Good For You is a monthly show, and you can like that show on Facebook if you're in that area, if you're in the Williamsburg, Brooklyn area and you're into comedy, you check out that show. It's a really fun time. And it's cool. Cause sometimes you kind of toil away in these rooms where there's nobody knows it's a show going on or there's nobody there and you get to work your material. So it's very, very cool. Then I tried to hightail it over to Gotham. I had a spot there. Thankfully, I was closing the show out, so I didn't have to be in a really big rush, but it was a 10:45 show. And just getting from Brooklyn to Chelsea was, God, that took like, I think it took 45 minutes. I was like, Jesus Christ, it shouldn't take that long. Like traffic in New York City, I know they want you to take the train and I know that's how the city's set up. But when you live in Jersey like me and I just give myself extra time to get to these places anyway. But, you know, like it's just kind of a shit show, man, with traffic. It's like, dude, this is not rush hour. Why are there so many cars, dude? Why is there so much traffic? Why are people driving like idiots? I don't. It's annoying, but thankfully, the parking gods let me have parking in decent places, so I was fine, and I didn't miss the show. By the time I got there, the host was on stage. She was hosting, doing her thing. And they brought the first comic up. So I got there in time. So I do that show, and I'm closing the show out. And I was hearing that there was some people talking during the show. And this is one of those, like, moments. Well, I'll just talk about it. So I was doing my thing, getting laughs, doing my job. And there's the Vintage Lounge at Gotham Comedy Club is like, you have the main stage, the main room where you have like your 200 plus people and it's, you know, it's great in there. It's dope. And then you have the Vintage Lounge, which I don't know, maybe you get 100 people in there, 80 to 100 people. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure, but you get a good amount of people. And if people are in there, you can have a good show. And that's what this show is. Alex Barnett and Aaron Camino Smith run a show called After Hours, and I believe it's a monthly show that they do down there. Vintage Lounge is a good room. People, most of the shows that I've done, there always seems to be people in that room that are talking while comedians are on stage working, and it's fucking annoying. And the crowd was pretty good most of the night. And I noticed like other comics talking about them talking. And so I get up there and I'm doing my thing. And I just noticed like maybe I'm like 10 minutes in. And I look over and I said, what do you guys talk? Like it got loud. And I don't know if they were working on their checks or the checks got dropped. But I was just like, what's going on over here? It just looks like it's like you guys are talking and because the worst thing you can do, because I'm a big fucking black guy, and if I get any type of anger, if there's any type of anger, you people automatically shut down, and then I feel like a vice principal or a substitute teacher because I'm admonishing students, and that's not my job. My job is to make you laugh, and I just said, what's going on here? What are you guys doing? And I made a little quip and I moved on. And then I'm going setting up a story, setting up a bit, setting up a chunk. And I noticed, like, just like right in front of me to my stage left, there's a guy talking about his check with the girl he's with, and they're trying to figure out the check. And I just looked down. It's just loud as fuck. And I looked down. I was like, dude, just pay for the whole check. Pay for her. Dude, come on. Just pay for it. And I just riffed about, like, dude, if you can't pay for her, just, like, don't ask her out. And the crowd just, like, got in. They were just laughing, and they had a great time. And then I noticed where he got a little tight, and his girl was embarrassed. And I just told, like, I just had this chunk about dating that I talked about, and everybody, you know, settled down. And then I, you know, but that just, it just kind of just threw me off. And it didn't throw me off. It throwed me off from what I was trying to do. And I ended up doing what I wanted to do to close, but I wasn't super comfortable with closing with that bit, the newer chunk that I'm working on. And I noticed where I kind of lost them a little bit, but I just powered through and I stuck the landing. So it was like, I was just like, okay, you stuck the landing and it was fine. I did okay. I had a good set. And then I get off stage. I was, oh, you did a good job. People came up to me. Oh, you did a good job. And, just hanging out in the back of the room. And then one of the security guards comes up to me, and he's like, man, the way that you handled, because I think the security guards at Gotham are cops, like, and they're like off duty cops and detectives. So they, you know, if you fuck around at Gotham, they'll kick your ass out, or they'll snap your neck and throw you out in the back. And he was like, man, the way you handled that was amazing. You know, I've seen comics upstairs that I'm not even going to mention their names, but they're super famous. If anything like that happens, you know, they stop, they walk out of the room and they quit. And man, like the way that you handled that was great. 'Cause I was coming down here, I was about to, you know, get on those people, but you handled them. And that made me feel good. 'Cause I always say you have, like, your staff. The staff sees every, like, from my theater days, if you're making the crew laugh, if you're nice to the crew and you're respectful, you're doing what you're supposed to do as a performer, and they like you, you're doing your job. And this is when you're not, like, especially, like, for example, and I'll probably later on in the year, once I can talk about this thing, I mean, it's not like it's a super, super secret. If you're friends with me on Facebook, you saw like a glimmer of what was going on, or Instagram, you can see. But if you, it's 'cause it's about doing your job, and it's fun to perform and everything. But just the work ethic of being efficient. You want to be great, but you want efficiency. You need to hit your mark when you're supposed to hit it, when they tell you to hit it. I was at this shoot, and I did, like, we went through the first series of what we were doing, and the crew's like, oh man, that was great. Because they're your audience. Like, when you're filming something, you don't have your audience around you. So you don't know. They're a pretty good gauge, and I'm not at the point where if somebody doesn't like what I'm doing, I would probably get fired, or they won't have me back, or a number of things can happen. But when your crew says, "Oh, that was really great," because they see everything, the crew, the staff, the staff at a comedy club, they see everything. And they see all types of acts. They see all types of people. And when they give you props for something, it means a lot, because they don't have to do it. So when he said that to me, like, I was like, man, that felt really good. Like, that was really great. 'Cause normally comes from a guy who's coming from, whose origin is from the theater community. where your shit, everything is scripted. You do this, you walk in, you pick this thing up, and you have these stage directions, and you fill it with your talent, your acting, and the way you do your shit. But you're following, you know, you have an idea of what's going to happen. You have a playbook. And with stand-up, you have that same thing, but there's so many different things that can happen while you're on stage. And you could, I think, older, younger me as a comedian would have just powered through the set and said, oh, those people were really annoying when they were fucking talking. But now, like, I addressed it. And I saw, like, it's one of those things where, like, the incremental progress, that was really cool. And to get props like that, that meant a lot. Cause I kind of didn't think about it. I was just like, dude, and that was a real moment that I had with those, with that couple and the rest of the crowd. And it was really dope. So, I'm evolving as an artist. And it's a really cool thing. So that meant a lot. That was a great capper. It was a great capper from a good, really fun week, a way to cap off a productive week in show business. Chris is flirting with show business. So that was fun. And then after that, I went to Walmart at 2 o'clock in the morning and got groceries. I found out that the Walmart near me is a 24 hour. And I don't think I've ever been to Walmart that late. You can get a lot of shopping done. There's kids riding around on the, what do you call those, electronic carts? And you can have very efficient shopping at Walmart. I don't know how often I'll do that, but I know when you go early, it's less of a shit show, and Walmart usually has everything you need. So, so that was that. Where are we at? We're in 56 minutes into this thing. I've been blabbing so much. So we talked about chicken. We talked about comedy. And talked about filming some stuff. TV. I don't know if I've told you guys. Well, Pretty Little Liars is back. They're two weeks into the second half of the sixth season. It's fine. Like, I still live tweeted. I'll make fun of Arya's clothes. It's fun to make fun of her clothes because she's hot, and anything she, like, what's her name? Lucy Hale's hot. And you can just, it's like, let me take her down a peg. What is that sweater you're wearing? And I don't have that much fashion sense. But I'm like, Arya, what the fuck, dude? So I have fun live tweeting that show. Didn't get as many retweets. Maybe I didn't deserve them that much this week, but you know, I did all right. I did all right with the live tweeting of Pretty Little Liars. I've been I don't know if I said, but I've watched season 1 of Jane the Virgin, and I like it. It's a good show. J.L. Covan recommended it. Gina Rodriguez is hot and she's talented. And it's like it plays out like a telenovela. And it's not like what's the pretty girl that used to date, married to Tony Parker? Oh my God, Chris, come on! I see her face, I'm becoming my dad, both my parents, way too early. Oh my God! Oh my God! I'm just gonna leave the mic on. I'm not gonna pause it. And of course, my Jesus Christ, Eva Longoria. Her show's more like the 30 Rock of a telenovela because it gives you like behind the scenes of the show, and it's pretty good. I like it. It's good to see some brown people on screen being funny, and so it's kind of like that, but it's a little more. It's way more melodramatic than the Eva Longoria series, but it's very good. I watched the first season, and so that I watched that, Pretty Little Liars. American Crime is good, but it's like that's one of those shows that's like that's super heavy handed. It's like, dumb, this is a thing. And like, you know, like a show, I tweeted this, guys. You know, a show is swinging for the fences when you have a character do a monologue slash slam poetry about getting sexually abused, and it's a dude. You know, you got some good performances. It's one of those, like, I would say it can be very heavy handed, but at its best, it kind of reminds me of Traffic, and like it's very Altman-esque in a way where you're dealing with a lot of how a certain event affects different people in the same area, people of different social stature, race, all these different variables that come into play. So it does a good job of that. So I recommend that. And then I discovered this show. This past week, I discovered this show called Friday Night Tykes on Netflix. And I remember seeing it and adding it to my list on Netflix. And I think I saw somebody tweet about it, and I said, "Oh, let me just start watching it." It is so good. Friday Night Tykes is a documentary series about the Texas Youth Football Association, TYFA. And it's the most competitive youth football, one of the most, if not the most competitive youth football league in the country. And they follow these teams from the San Antonio, Texas area. And the kids are ranged from about 8 to 11, I want to say. It's so good. And it's super intense. You have these coaches that are, you know, they're yelling at kids, make a play, hit somebody. Ah! And it's super intense. And I don't know where to really start, but it's just, it's amazing. You have an interesting cast of characters. There's one mom who was trying to be a recurring character on the show, where she was talking about her kid had a concussion, and she's like, "Yeah, I knew he was hurt because, you know, he didn't even want to play Xbox, and I know when that nigga don't want to play Xbox, he had a problem." And I was like, "God damn, it's so funny, so real." And it's super intense, and I've just cursory, like when I did the Google search for the show, I saw where, you know, this is the most depressing documentary ever, and it's bad for the kids, and blah, blah, blah. No, I don't know. I feel really conflicted about it. I don't know if I would let my kid do it. Maybe, like some people say high school is when the kids should start. But if I had a kid, I don't know, like, because I feel conflicted because I did it when I was a kid, not at that intense level. It was boys and girls club. And I played from like 10 to, I did it for 3 years. And, it just wasn't in me, but it teaches you about character. Like, especially for boy, I would say that this show is like the boy version of Toddlers and Tiaras. And that's one of the best ways to describe it. But it's better. And I think it's better for the kids involved, because Toddlers and Tiaras, yeah, you know, maybe it teaches a girl manners, but to sexualize these young girls is wrong. Just the creepy JonBenet vibe that I get from seeing these little girls in makeup is just creepy as fuck to me. Like, this is not my cup of tea. I used to do a bit about it, and I bring it out every now and then, but I I just feel conflicted because it's, I think it's something that it's a rite of passage. It's also a part of socialization. Cause I feel like I feel better about girls playing sports than I do about those girls being in toddlers and tiaras, because it's sports, athletics helps you with socialization, to be a part of a team, to be a part of a group, to get to have camaraderie with kids your own age. There was actually a girl featured in the second season. The first two seasons are on Netflix. And I don't know, like, the, because I did it and it helped me. Like, when I was a kid, I was a bigger kid. I was a fat kid. And I played with kids that were, I was in fifth grade, maybe fifth or sixth grade. And the other kids were like in, I think it was me and another guy that were bigger. And the other kids were like in seventh, eighth grade, may have been in ninth, and they were older. And it just taught me like character and to like not be afraid. I remember if you go all the way back to episode 14, when I'm talking to my dad, like that, there were some good stories from that when I played. I wasn't a tough kid, but I wouldn't let anybody push me around. But I just noticed, like, these kids, like, you know, these kids are yelling, like the coaches are yelling at them and shit. And you're watching these games, and the games are intense, and you see these kids make these amazing fucking plays. I'm not gonna spoil anything for you. I would just say watch this shit and just be compelled emotionally. I cried maybe at least three times. Just got emotional three times watching this shit. Because there's plays that there's a couple of kids that are featured on this show that are just stars. And if their path continues, you'll probably be hearing about them in college and the NFL. There's just some of these kids that are that good. And it's Texas, which is the mecca of football. So it's like if these kids just keep ascending to these levels, you know they'll be stars. And you see them make these plays. And then with some of them, he's like, oh, my God, this guy's fucking great. And the coach's like, that's how you fucking play. That's how you play football. Fuck that. And they go crazy. And then you see these kids you see one of them get hurt. And they just start crying. They're like, And it's like, oh, yeah, they're just kids. Like, this kid's just nine. Like, he's 9 years old. And you just forget because you're so emotionally compelled and you're watching this. And, they mostly deal with the parents on the show. They mostly talk to them, the parents and the coaches. And you got coaches' egos involved. But one of the best things about this show is the fact that you're seeing black men actively participating in the lives of black boys, little black boys. And it's such a positive image that, like, that's one of the reasons why I got emotional. And I felt like, cause part of me used to feel, and I would say before seeing this show, and for quite some time, I had this in my head that my generation, if you're anywhere in your early to mid 30s and you were lucky to have both your parents, but just that my generation, kids around me, the kids that I grew up with, most of them had parents in their lives. And I would just see that because I would, when I was a kid, go to these games and you'd see the dads at the games, like the fathers were in the kids' lives. You'd see the parents at the games. They'd be in their work uniform. If they'd be a, you know, police officer, fireman, or whatever they did, or if they were a mechanic, they were in their fucking uniforms from their job, and they would be at those practices. They'd be involved. They were a part of the community, and you'd see it. Part of me was just like, oh, it's just not like that anymore. And it's not like, oh, we were lucky. And to see in this series, you know, there's some, you know, it's mentioned that, you know, a lot of these kids come from single family homes, and these are the only men that these kids see, you know, on a daily basis, on a regular basis during the season. And it's so heartwarming, man, like with all the negative shit that's going on in the world. And to see that, to witness that, it's just, it's fucking beautiful, man. And I just, that in and of itself, just kind of, I don't want to say it doesn't fully erase the fact that, you know, these kids are having concussions and they're banging on each other. I think some of it's technique. I think the kids, some of them aren't tackling right. I don't think I was the best tackler, but I got a head injury doing karate. I like fell or some shit in karate, or I think we were playing or something. I got hurt at a party. I don't even fucking remember. But I just remember, like, maybe that's because I got the injury. But I don't remember getting hurt playing youth football. I got the wind knocked out of me by this kid that was in the eighth grade. Like, he was like a fucking angry kid. I don't think he was an angry kid. He was just like one of those quiet, intense guys. And we were playing this game called the Nutcracker, where you'd like, we call it the Nutcracker, where you have one guy with the ball, and you're both laying down flat on your bat. And I think maybe you're like 5 or 10 yards away from each other. Coach blows a whistle, you get up and you ram into each other. And this kid, like, just, I just lost the wind. He just knocked the wind out of me. And that was fucked up. But I don't remember, fortunately, not getting hurt. But, you know, some of these kids have concussions and all that stuff. It's intense. But I don't know. Like, you have these guys that are coaching these kids that they genuinely care. I thought there was one coach, and I tweeted it, and I had to delete it. I was like, your coach is a douche if he wears a Money Team T-shirt. And it was, like, towards the end of the season, I was like, no, this guy's not a douche. He really cares about his kids. And I think you even see it more in the second season. It's just like, it's such a really good series. And people try to say, oh, you know, they try to make statements like it's bad for kids. And it's, I don't know. I'm on the fence about, you know, youth football. 'Cause I did it, and it was fine. But like Fox Sports, they said, like, Friday Night Tykes is the heading. Friday Night Tykes is the most depressing show on television. You know, they try to say that these guys are crazy, but it gives kids like it gives kids goals. It gives them a schedule. Like something to look forward to, something to believe in. I just think youth athletics in and of itself is good. It's really good. And this is coming from a theater nerd. This is coming from an artist. I just think the kids need to be involved in something. And it's great to see that. It's great to see those images of those black men saying, like, there was one episode where a kid was crying after a playoff game, and his dad's like, man, this is like, it's all right, man. It's okay. You're going to lose a lot. You're going to win and you're going to lose. I love you. You're a good football player. I love you. Let's go. You know, like, just that moment was just like, man, that's an image that you don't see a lot on television at all. And, like, I had that. Like, my dad, part of him, like, he was, like, living vicariously through me, and he wanted it more than I did. And I was just like, oh, I think this will be fun to play football because I like football. But he was looking at it as more, you know, as to be something more than what he thought it was. And maybe I could have did something. Not to say like, oh, I would have been fucking playing in the NFL, dude. But I probably, I don't know. You never know. Who knows? But I just remember most of those experiences being good. I just didn't like to practice. I liked scrimmaging at practice. That's what I liked. I like when we would play each other, and then I liked the games. And that was 1990. So that was 25 years ago, 26 years ago, right? I'm trying to think back to those times. Practice was pretty intense. I didn't like those drills. I wasn't a fan of the drills. I wasn't a fan of running. Obviously, I wasn't a fan of running. I just liked scrimmaging. I liked hitting, you know, playing. I played defensive line. Sometimes I played offensive line. Yeah. It's just the way that they, like, these coaches, they recruit kids. They try to get them to go to other teams. I'm watching season 3 now. I just watched the first episode of season 3. And there's this one, I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's just one kid that's just, watching this kid run is like a thing of fucking beauty. And it's just the what they put on these kids, like the pressure that they put on them. One of the coaches, yo, you got to get 200 yards. You got to get 200 yards if we're going to win this. And the kid goes back to his teammates. He's like, I gotta get 200 yards. And he pretty much fucking does it. And just the way that these kids, like, you just realize that some of the teams just aren't that good, but most of the teams that they followed were really good. The coaches were really compelling, and that made it more interesting. But you just like you see this one kid that's so like a fucking, I'm trying to think who he would remind me of. Kind of like like he was a running back. He's kind of there was one part where one of the kids got hurt. And then they said, you all right. Stop crying. You okay? And gets back in the game and like scores a touchdown. And he's like, yeah, get your money back. It was just so like to see these kids, like a kid get hurt. I'm getting emotional now. Like the kid got he got hurt and then he just came back and still like persevered over his injury or over the busted play that happened in the last like series. It was so fucking amazing, man, that these kids are just 8, 9, and 10 years old, and they just, like, it's so compelling. And some of these fucking kids are huge. I was a big kid, you know, but I was not that big. Some of these kids are like, no, motherfucker, you're 15. There's no way you're 10. You're 15 years old, dude. You're just running over these kids, and it's too much. But I highly recommend, like, if you are thinking about watching a new series on Netflix or something, Friday Night Tykes, and you're a fan of football, if you were a fan of the Friday Night Lights series, the movie, the book, it's so good. Obviously, you can make a social commentary on this and say, is this right for kids? Is it? I just feel like I'm on the other side of it because I did it when I was a kid. It was something that helped me. Because kids are pretty fucking soft these days, and I used to teach them, and I could see that they're, you know, I don't know, and I wasn't, and this is coming from a man who doesn't consider myself to be tough, but like when you have to deal with adversity, what are you gonna do? Like, how are you gonna overcome that? And if it's not football. Maybe it's other sports, you know. Maybe it's another sport. Maybe it's chess. Maybe it's the arts. Maybe it's something else. Something that engages you. I don't know. I think maybe in another life or maybe in another if I wasn't doing what I'm doing now, maybe I would want to be a teacher to, or just to try to have some type of positive impact in kids' lives. Where maybe that's why some of these things are so compelling to me. But my God, Friday Night Tykes, best show I've seen recently, like as far as reality documentaries go. And I don't let this stuff turn you. It, I would say it's kind of jarring to some degree, but I just remember coaches talking to me like that, and I didn't get too upset. There's been directors that kind of talk like that, like coaches. I actually fed on that shit as a kid, 'cause it made me like lock in when a director would be so passionate or pissed, or a coach would be that. It would just make me lock in more. Like when you have a fiery director, like I've had a couple of those, you know, like it would just be like, yeah, we got to fucking do this. And a lot of that stuff comes, all that team building shit, that comes from sports, man. And this is coming from somebody that's not a jock, so I know what the fuck I'm talking. I know what I'm talking about. All right, so let's see. I've been going for a long ass time. I hope this is interesting to you guys, and we'll wrap it up. Movies. I didn't talk about this last week, but there was all this. Obviously, there's all the drama about the hashtag Oscar so white and all that shit. You know, it's been like that for years, but I'm glad people are finally catching up to the fact that, you know, black people don't get nominated for these Oscars. It's not enough shit going on for hashtag black actors, and we need to change that. But amidst all of that bullshit, I watched The Intern on demand with Robert De Niro and Anne Hathaway. What a fucking delightful ass movie. Oh my God, it was delightful as fuck. I enjoyed it so much. It was just one of those change of pace movies that just put me, I needed it. I'll read you the plot. No, I don't want to read you the plot. I wanted to read you the little wiki. Ah, damn it. It doesn't give you that. I'll just riff it. Okay, here we go. A retired successful business owner and widower lands an internship at a fashion website run by a young career-driven woman. That was written by Jason Buchanan, and that was like a Rotten Tomatoes rating. It got a 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a Nancy Meyers movie. It's just like, it was fun. Like it was a little darkness over it, but you know, bit of like real shit. But it's a overall sweet movie, and it was just really good. It hit the spot, and I enjoyed it. Some people gave me shit for it, but I liked it because I don't know. Like I wanted to, you know. Now movies come out on like digitally before they come out on DVD, and before you can actually, you know, rent them at Redbox or pay like $5 or $6 for it. And I was like, damn, do I want to buy this like something telling me that I want to see this movie, like, and I really want to see it. I'm obviously not paying $20 for it, but I want to see it, so I will get it on demand for like $6. And I was like, all right, it's fucking good, man. I loved it. Oh, so good. Anne Hathaway, De Niro. Can you go wrong? They're adorable together. So I saw that on demand week before. I don't know. Last week. And then I went to the movies because I had to kill time. I had to kill a chunk of time after work. So I didn't. Part of me, like, I was like, man, 50 Shades of Black, do I really want to see that? And I was like, I don't know. There are black people on screen. That would be cool. But I was like, ah, you know what? Then I found out this Natalie Portman movie was out called Jane Got a Gun. And 35% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is the blurb. With help from her ex-fiance, Joel Edgerton, a woman, Natalie Portman, must defend her family from a vengeful outlaw, Ewan McGregor, and his gang of killers in the Old West. You could wait for this. You could wait for it on Redbox. It's not. The poster looks dope, actually. It's okay. And I fell asleep a couple times. Not because, and when I fall asleep, it's usually not because of the movie, because I'll watch a movie all the way through, but I just dozed off a couple times because I was exhausted. It's okay. If you, you know, it's, you do not have to see this in the theater. January, this is a, this has been a, this was a bad January for movies. If you were pretty much caught up on all of the Oscar movies or all of the Oscar movies that you wanted to see. I was talking to a coworker about The Danish Girl and Carol, and we were both like, I just really don't care. Like, I don't really want to see it. Like, I will see them when they're on DVD and Blu-ray, but I know that they're not going to win Oscars. Like, at least maybe Rooney. No, Rooney Mara's not. I don't know who's winning Best Supporting Actress, actually. I forgot what I said on JL's podcast. But anyway, not really shit based on the SAG Awards. Alicia Vikander might win. Or looks like Alicia Vikander might take that shit, man. Did she win for... I'm not even going to get into that. But the SAG Awards were last night. So, okay. So, Jane Got a Gun. It was okay. Wait for Redbox or wait till it comes out on cable. You'll be like, oh, okay. All right. That was a movie. That would be something that I would, like, make, let my dad. My dad likes Westerns, and that might be something when it comes out next week. It comes out on DVD or something. I would buy it for him because he loves Westerns. It was just, it was just kind of like, it was just meh. I just don't know. Like, if you're a nerd and a fan of movies like me, and you want to go see something, if you would probably be better off seeing something on demand, really. I want to see Mojave with Garrett Hedlund and Oscar Isaac. I will see anything Oscar Isaac is in. Maybe what I'll do is try to rent a couple on Sunday, like watch some movies up until Super Bowl time. But anyway, Jane Got a Gun. You can wait on that. I like Natalie Portman, so I gave it a shot. And it was interesting how they told the story. They had, you know, a bunch of flashbacks to when, and then that's how they, you know, told the story, but I wasn't too keen on it. I just wish I would have. It was just kind of a weird Friday because I got my Stubbs points, but then I used the Stubbs points for like popcorn and water because it really wasn't like any other movie that I would have wanted to see. So it's just kind of like, Yeah, I guess I'm looking forward to Deadpool. I guess that would be the only thing that I would be excited about right now. I'm not a super big Deadpool fan, but I think I would be a fan of Ryan Reynolds. This guy has played, how many superheroes has this dude played? Like, people don't give a shit. Like, didn't he played Green Lantern? And didn't he play Gambit? You know, I think he's a good actor, but they just haven't found anything for him to really hit. Like, Just Friends was the shit. That was a good movie. That was like 05, 06. And then, like, he did a movie called The Nines that was really good. Mississippi Grind, solid movie that just came out recently. He's just a good actor, but I think they wanted more for him for his career than I guess. I don't know. They made, is he a size? I don't know. I think he's shit, man. The Deadpool could be it, because I guess that character is really makes a lot of quips and he's sarcastic. So we'll see. Deadpool, I guess, will be the next thing I see. I don't know. I don't know, you guys. Okay, let's get the fuck out of here. Let's talk music. I did listen to a new album. Anderson .Paak, who is a West Coast singer, songwriter, rapper. Where is he from? He's from Oxnard, California. I think that's near where the Dallas Cowboys have training camp. This guy was on the Dre's album Compton. This looks like this was his fourth album. Damn. 1, 2, 3. Malibu is his current album. It's fucking terrific. That's what I listened to. And I first heard about this guy, I think I believe this album is off of Stone's Throw Records. I want to say it is. No, it's not. It's off of Steel Wool, OBE, Art Club. He was doing some Stone's Throw shit with this dude named Knowledge, KNX. Ledge, how you spell knowledge, but with the K, oh my God. But, I just saw one of his YouTube clips where he was singing. I was like, oh, this guy is cool. And then all of the cool kids on Twitter, and I'm not being sarcastic about it, but the cool kids that I follow on Twitter are talking about going to his shows and liking this dude. So I was like, okay, let's check this guy out. Let's check this guy that the young people, the cool kids are talking about. And I listened to him on my way to Brooklyn last night, and it's good. The homie Don Will, friend of the podcast, I went over to see him. I told you he was a DJ over at Night Train, and it was great to see him. But I was like, dude, I'll see you after the show. And he had left after the show to go DJ and host trivia at this spot called Pork Slope. So Marianne Ways told me, she said, Chris, well, he's over at Pork Slope. Go over there. It's just like a few minutes away. So I drove over there and chopped it up with him for a little bit. And he was telling me, we were talking about music, and he was like, I was like, all right, did you check out Anderson .Paak? Have you heard his album yet? And I said, I just haven't listened to it. And he was like, yeah, man, it's really, he's good. He's dope. He said it reminded him of Firstborn Second Bilal, when Bilal came out in like 2000. And like just that kind of vibe. And I was like, dude, that's big shoes to fill, man. Like, are you serious about this? And he was like, yeah, man, yeah. And I was like, well, okay, well, I'll listen to it on the way back home. He's like, well, how long does it take you to get home? I was like, like a half an hour. He's like, nah, you're going to want to listen to it when you have a long ride, because if I'm walking around, like if I'm walking near my apartment and it's in my headphones, I walk around till I'm done with the album. I was like, oh, it's one of those. So I was like, all right, I know I got a long ride to Brooklyn. Let me pop it in. And dude is official. Like, it's terrific. He's kind of got like a throwback thing without all the affectations of it, you know, just vocally and sonically. It has, I wouldn't say it's like this kid Leon Bridges, who I need to revisit, but it's just like that vibe that's like just the soulful. He's just got a very soulful voice. The production's terrific. Ninth Wonder, DJ Khalil, Madlib, Catronata, High Tech, the Drumheads, and a bunch of other people that I've never heard of. But it's good. It's a really good album. If you're into the soulful stuff and like the nice gritty, dirty sound for some of these records, he's good, man. This guy's the real deal. sound like Sarah Palin. I sound like Tina Fey doing Sarah Palin, right? The drill dill. I mean, kind of. I'm not exactly like. But it's dope, man. And so I would say definitely check that dude out. And I'm going to listen to King's new album, We Are King, their debut album. And I'll tell you about that probably next week. And I'll give you some dates. Let's give you some comedy dates for February. So far on the books, I'll be at the Experiment Comedy Gallery on February 5th. It's the Sue Smith Show, and that's at 8 o'clock p.m. on Friday. On Saturday, I'll be at Bistro B in Westport, Connecticut, opening for Mitch Fatel. It's a restaurant. That's at 9 o'clock p.m. February 10th, I will be at Bar 2A in New York City at 8 o'clock p.m. February 22nd, Bunga's Den at 8 o'clock p.m. February 28th, I'll be at UCB East at 9 o'clock p.m. So those are some dates. Those are some February dates so far. And be on the lookout for more dates at chrislamberth.com. So that's the end of the show. This has been episode 154 of the pod. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you, and I'll talk to you next time. Peace. Appreciate